Good morning. My name is Karen, and I'll be your conference facilitator today. Welcome to First Choice Healthcare Solutions' second quarter 2017 financial results. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow management's prepared remarks. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. A replay of today's call will be available on First Choice's website later today and will remain posted there for the next 90 days. I would like to remind everyone that any forward-looking statements made during the call are protected under the Safe Harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation and Reform Act. Such forward-looking statements are based upon current expectations, and there can be no assurance that the results contemplated in the statements will be realized. Actual results may differ materially from such statements due to a number of important factors and risks, which are identified in our press release and our annual and quarterly reports filed with the SEC. These forward-looking statements are based on information available to First Choice today, and the company assumes no obligation to update statements as circumstances change. Additionally, during today's call, the company's management may discuss non-GAAP measures, which they believe can be useful in evaluating the company's performance. The presentation of this additional information should be considered in isolation or as a substitute for results prepared in accordance with GAAP. A reconciliation of adjusted EBITDA can be found in the company's earnings release, which posted to the wire earlier today and can be viewed on First Choice's website found at www.myfch.com. Joining us on the call today is Phil Keller, CFO. Now, at this time, it is my pleasure to introduce Chris Romandetti, Chairman, President, and CEO of First Choice. Sir, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Karen. I appreciate it. Good morning, everybody, and I appreciate everybody that's on the call and following us here at First Choice. What I'd like to do is start off by, in a moment, turning this over to Phil, but let me first do this a little follow-up to that since haven't had a time to talk since our last call about the financial position and why we elected to make the change. It was noted a year ago when we brought Tim in that, you know, we gave him a 1 year where we both sat down and looked at things to talk about changing our revenue cycle, looking at our AR, looking at our recognition of revenue, and then implementing teams that can turn around and execute that. And although Tim gave it a gallant effort to do that, coming out of the cycle that he was in the hospital systems, I don't think it was nearly as natural for him to implement the team required to try to execute the plan. So no different than I've done in the past when I wasn't happy with the accounting firm. You saw I took quick action and upgraded it, and I felt we did a great job bringing in Markham and now giving us the tools we need on an accurate forecast in a timely manner. We've elected to part ways in a great fashion where Tim has now moved on to return into the hospital system, and we wish him luck. But on the case of doing what we're doing now, with Phil's experience and the public experience he's had over the years and working this, understanding we live and die about every 62 days of business, he's more familiar with the demands of what are there. So with no further delay, before I get into my comments, I'd like to turn the call over. Welcome Phil Keller as CFO of First Choice Healthcare Solutions, and let him take over the call and talk a little bit about the numbers. Phil?
Thanks, Chris, and good morning, everyone. Before I get into the numbers, I wanted to just thank Chris and the entire First Choice team. They have welcomed me with open arms and supported all of my questions and inquiries as I've prepared for this call and for filing the 10-Q. While interviewing and deciding to join First Choice, I was excited about the company and Chris's vision for the future. I can say after 15 days, I'm even more excited. As we add physician providers, continue to expand our physical therapy services, and broaden our ancillary services, our top-line growth will continue and profitability will increase. Let me now start talking about a little bit of numbers before I make some closing remarks and turn the call back over to Chris. For the 3 months ended June 30th, our overall revenues were $8.2 million, or 7.3% greater than last year, and our net patient revenue increased 8.7% to $7.6 million, a record level for the company. Our operating expenses were $8.4 million compared to $7.4 million in the prior year, or a 14% increase. This increase is a direct result of the company's decision to grow its provider base, expand our physical therapy offerings, and start ramping up our ancillary services. Compared to last year, we have 3 additional physicians and the related support staffs, as well as the expanded our PT sites from 1 to 3, with continued expansion planned for the balance of the year, up to 5 in total. Unfortunately, a lot of the costs associated with these startups hit immediately, but while it takes months for the revenues to ramp up. But we feel we have the infrastructure in place to maximize revenue in the third and fourth quarter. Finally, our net loss attributed to First Choice shareholders was approximately $132,000 compared to $153,000 of income from last year. Earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, or EBITDA, was approximately $593,000 for the quarter compared to $862,000 from the prior year. Turning to the year-to-date numbers, 6 months ended June 30th, our overall revenues were $15.9 million, or 7% greater than last year, and our net patient revenue increased 8.3% to $14.8 million. Our operating expenses were $16 million compared to $14.1 million from the prior year, with the same infrastructure buildup that we talked about in the second quarter was occurring in the first quarter as well. Finally, our net income for the year-to-date is $71,000 compared to $9.7 million from the prior year. As a reminder, last year's results included a one-time gain on the sale of the building for $9.2 million. We've used the proceeds of that sale to invest and grow the company. And our year-to-date EBITDA was approximately $1.3 million compared to $2.1 million from the prior year. Turning over and looking at the balance sheet, our cash on hand at 6/30 was approximately $3.2 million, and we had $1.4 million available on our revolver. Our receivables are up to $14.6 million on a gross basis and $10.9 million net of a reserve of $3.8 million, or 23.3%. And our cash used in operations was $864,000 for the 6 months ended June 30th compared to cash use in operations of $1.3 million in the prior year. The approximately $400,000 reduction in cash use in operations is the result of changes in our working capital. That kind of concludes my financial comments and kind of got the boring part over. But now I really want to talk about some of the things that I'm looking at, where my efforts are focused on for the next 30, 60, and 90 days. I see really tremendous opportunities in our revenue cycle management processes, tightening up our billing and collection, and reducing denials and accelerating the cash conversion cycle for First Choice. Looking deeply into the profitability of our service lines and as well as our providers so we know how and why we make money and where we can maximize that and go forward. Getting the right surgeries in the right settings to ensure continued profitability and growing profitability. Finally, I'm also looking at our managed care contracts and trying to align them and getting and negotiating improvements in our rates going forward. I'm really excited to be on board, and I really look forward to the future of First Choice and being part of the team and going forward. Chris?
All right. Well, thank you, Phil, on that. And again, for the short period of time, on a higher level of looking at it, I really want to appreciate Phil's in-depth and commitment to working it. You know, it's kind of hard when you get on board and you're told you have to file in 10 or 15 days and start working that, and then understanding everything the way Tim did turn it over to him, and then getting with Markham and getting the first cycle. But in doing that, Phil clearly identified the areas of improvements on what we agreed to prior to the interview of hiring him on where our strengths and our weaknesses are. So let me talk a little bit about that, because if I didn't give him the tools and make the commitment for him to do his job well, that was part of our conditions of coming on board. So what does that mean? Today we want to announce the expansion of our management team due to the fact for us to expand properly, we got to have a bigger, solid foundation. So I know there's going to be a bunch of you all thinking why we didn't grow revenues quicker, and in a few minutes I'm going to get into that deeper, but we needed a bigger bench, as we might say in the world of sport. So we introduced them. We've now put a full-time person into HR to take over the 180 employees that we have to make sure we're keeping that in compliance on all levels and filling the positions that are required. What I kept hearing from Tim is the resumes that were coming across the desk for revenue cycles and for different things weren't up to a standard of his. Now we have a full-time person that's sourcing that. We're also announcing that September 1, we're hiring and have hired and bringing in a director of ancillary services. This gentleman will be announced as he starts on his September, I guess it's the day after Labor Day, the 5th, and will be taking over operations and capable of coming out in the local community running triple center in our local community with the capabilities to expand in our ancillary services that are needed. So we really appreciate bringing somebody in that can really drill down and get his service line to hold the percentages. And a little later I'll discuss why he'll be important on possibly some of the actions we'll be taking in the area of potential acquisitions. Bringing Phil on board was big, and not only did he need that, but he needed the people for the analyzing of the numbers. And we're happy to say that we have offers out now to two people that we think will expand his area so that we can drill down to the questions you and other shareholders have asked to really be breaking down the profitability by not only service line, but even tighter by physicians and exactly to know what type surgeries do better for us, which ones don't, and making sure we're maximizing, like Phil said, where that place would be. So on the revenue cycle, I think that'll give him tools he needs much quicker so we can analyze that. Our DSOs are creeped up to 132. Some people have called in and said, why are we there, Chris? 100 seems to be a magic number in the industry. And I can tell you that we brought a new spine surgeon on in February. And when you do spine and 40 or 50% of your cases are Medicare, you do those and almost half of them go into automatic denials and appeal process, which just makes spine in itself a longer process. I'm proud to say when I had an independent analysis report done when we took over the back center that they were at 206 days and our blended mix is at 132. But if I were to bring in a bunch more spine people, that number could look normal at 150. That's just the service line of spine. Now, we don't think it'll remain there. It's Phil's job to pull that number in as tight as what is normal, and that'll be determined by the cycle of what each surgeon is. But when a brand new doc comes in and he's not credentialed, that AR takes a bit for the payers to do it. So that's what we thought Q2 raised that number and creeped up a little bit. Our revenue cycle, if you looked at our segment financing, is appreciating at the FCMG side because we conduct most of our ancillary services there, and they're starting to increase in what we wanted. Q1 to Q2, our surgical count, we were up 110 surgeries. It's not supposed to happen that way, but as I told you in Q1, we were down because of Dr. Harrison being out for a month and a half. So we think we're back to normal almost there now that his load's being picked up. And the fact that Dr. Billy's came in and contributed 20 surgeries. So our count went up in Q2. And now we got to talk about where did APV happen, Q1 to Q2. So in Q1, we took back a little bit of income out of our bad debt, which raised it up a few hundred dollars per surgery, which is why we creeped up to 10.2. And we adjusted our bad debt by some basis points. But nevertheless, which what we're seeing in Q2, and we went in and we're trying to drill through it for the call, this is where Tim needs what we call data jockeys to start producing this information for him. But it appears Q2 is non-elective surgery probably coming into the summer, our highest month of not doing elective surgery. When you have an elective person come in, they're taking their time, they're going through therapy, they're using all the services. And what we find out is when the kids are home during the summer, that isn't as frequent as we want. They don't do elective when the kids are home. So what we saw is a lot more acute cases. And when you see an acute case, these people are coming in because they broke their ankle or they broke their arm, and we're not capitalizing on how much ancillary we can offer them because they're being taken right to surgery. So again, that's what I'm hoping to get out of Phil is the trends over the time on exactly what is the cycle life of a patient. Is it more seasonal than possibly we think it is? Number two, Dr. Billies, who came on board down at the TBC Center as a spine surgeon, he doesn't have a 10-year book of business in his town, so the patients he's getting, he's actually doing surgery on people that don't want to wait 3 or 4 months for Dr. Hines and data, who already have been totally worked up. You can't work them up twice because a new doctor's there, so he's doing overflow surgery. And what we noticed with his surgeries in Q2 is that those people already were worked up in prior quarters, and he's just the people don't want to wait 4 months for Dr. Hines, who's booking out to December right now, so we're accelerating getting him in. So that's where I think our APV moved a little bit. We have no intention not to believe that we'll be trending up in that area and where our ideal target is. So talking about surgeries and a little bit more about that, we have it up on our website, but the bundle payments and moving surgeries out of hospitals right now from Medicare, you'll see a modernhealthcare.com article that came out, and then you go right to CMS to start looking at what they're discussing on how for 18 they're taking public input right now on how to move these heavier joint cases out of hospitals and into surgery centers. So we think we really have positioned ourselves to where we're going to follow that to where we're really hoping sooner than later we can start bringing those type cases to our center that I've been telling you we want to. Just hasn't happened yet, and it's because you can't force the payers to pay us exactly what we want to make it a profitable division. Under physical therapy, we're really proud that 2 units have come online, a total of 3 right now. As I explained on the first call, we were doing about 125 patients a week in January. We're averaging a little over 650 per week now. Our ideal target is to open up 2 more of these facilities still before year end, and our fully loaded target rate right now from our director of physical therapy is talking approximately 1,500 appointments in end of Q1 of 18, which would bring us to 1,500 people per week. And currently we're at 650, 2 more units loading up here in Q3 and 4. Our neurosurgeon that we kept telling you why we were hoping to get him in for Q1 has finally made it through some of the final steps at the hospital of credentialing and is going in their final steps, and we're expecting a favorable outcome here in Q3 that we actually will be able to get him boarded in the company and seated to start seeing patients here for the beginning of Q4. So we lost about 6 months on that expectations of that one particular surgeon. It's come to our attention with the volume of surgeries we're doing, and we felt that we did 670 in Q1, 780 in Q2, and with what we're forecasting for the balance of the year right now, that we are going to come in probably around 3,300 surgeries because we missed that doctor with 400 to get us close to our 4,000 number. That's a direct relation when fully loaded of what APV can do, so you can all do the math between 10,000 and 10,500, what that could equate to. Our physical plan, after talking with our directors of our different departments and bringing in ancillary and our VP of medical operations, is that our physical plants, our buildings and our surgery centers and our capacity can handle additional surgeries. So what I'm telling you today is that what we're looking at is that we found sources of about 8,000 additional surgeries being done in Melbourne. I've narrowed that down to the top 5,900 surgeries that other orthopedics are providing, and I am currently announcing that we're going to go after and try to put out offers to bring in an additional 2,000 surgeries off new physicians in the orthopedic care non-spine for January of 18 to start. So it might take 3 people to do that, it might take 4, but there's 5,900 eligible surgeries that we think offer us ancillary and care that we could gel with that could work better in our surgery center and in cases that are being done, and we don't know why, since we have the infrastructure, we don't bring that in. So Phil's doing an analysis on that to let us know that that could be great contributing margins that we want to start lining up to make sure that if we end this year where our Q4 this year, we're hoping we'll do 1,000 surgeries in Q4. That would put us at a run rate of 4,000 for next year comfortably. But if I bring in 2,000 and only get half that, that would get me to my 5,000 ideal mark for 2018 for the Brevard community. And as APV moves up with other additional services being provided, that's our goal for starting to look at setting our budgets out for next year. Moving on to physical therapy, I mentioned the neurosurgeon we mentioned. I'd like to move down now to a little bit about our stock buyback program. I've been getting some emails from folks to ask what really happened. I know the numbers came out yesterday, but in the actual Q2, we achieved roughly 32,000 shares of buying stock being repurchased back. And since Q2 to date through the 11th, we purchased another 65,000 shares. In addition to that, we had some service contracts that weren't earned and shares returned of 142.5. So through the 11th of this month, we're representing that 241,000 shares will be returned to the Treasury and approximately 1% of the outstanding at December 31. So we feel pretty good that in that 60 days, we achieved a 1% reduction in outstanding shares. We have been looking a little bit about some of the institutions that are out there. I can tell you today that some of the participating institution, although small, has increasing or is continuing to increase their positions. So we're optimistic of the confidence that they're showing us. Moving on to potential expansion and when it can happen. I mentioned earlier I'm bringing in an ancillary manager. We wouldn't really need a top gun to look at just what we're running if we weren't trying to line up with other ancillary services in our community. I've mentioned on previous calls that might include but not be limited to a home care to get prepared for joints being done in our center. There are other ancillary services that are available that we think we can capitalize on, but to be honest, buying one or buying two of these locations is the easiest step. Having the core management in place, somebody who can look at these numbers, have Phil put them on a budget system that we know exactly what we'd be getting into, and then a manager that can run it is paramount, and that's why we're bringing and moving in the operation that we're doing. So we continue to discuss that. We're in negotiations and continue to be with a couple of great opportunities that we're still trying to tie down now and make sure Phil concurs with some of the performers that I've been working with and that we can endorse moving ahead. The next one would be, is still a strategic partner. Who's the best person to move ahead for 2018? Because as I've said, getting Melbourne to the number of 5,000 surgeries, having the right core people in place to be able to execute that, and moving surgeries out of our hospital and into our surgery center is something that I can't adjust every day. I can't have meetings every day to say, are we done? It moves a little slow, but when it moves, it has great traction. So we're still looking ahead now. What cities can we go to and where can we be in them? And today, once again, I can tell you that we happen to have conversations going on with not one but two organizations that like what we do. Organization might not be correct statement. Strategic partners that like what we're doing and think that we can complement one another into other areas. And we've actually started to identify those other areas, looking at the market rates, looking at the reimbursements that we're really working hard again with Phil getting enough people on the ground to make sure if I go to pick a city I want to go to next, what will it take and what would it look like post-closing on our balance sheet? And then how can we move ahead in these? So with that, we'll move to the last part of my prepared statements, and we're going to talk about a guidance update. As I mentioned earlier, we did about 670 surgeries Q1, 780 in Q2, and I'm preparing with our current spine surgeon, vacation, people coming back and forth, that we should be creeping up around mid-800s for Q3. And then because a lot of people like getting their surgeries done before year-end to achieve these higher deductibles that our government has put in a lot of these plans, usually Q4 is our best quarter, and we should be sitting close or minus to 1,000 surgeries in Q4. With doing that, that would put us somewhere around 3,300 surgeries completed for the year. If our APV holds the average where we are now of about 10.2, that speaks for itself that we could be right around $32 million. Plus or minus some rental income. So for today, what I want to do is I'm going to update guidance to say that for 2017, we're feeling comfortable that we think our range will be between $34 and $36 million. on the guidance as it relates to EBITDA. Unlike what I know the system can perform at and what it has performed at, and with Phil now coming in and recommending me for growth, he wants me to be less concentrated on trying to say it's a 15 to 20% end growth at these numbers at the same time, compared to we can't amortize startup costs, we can't amortize the training, the when you open up a PT location that can see 300 patients a week, it costs you a full load of people day one. And you have to have that in place so the state certifies it. So there's a lot more upfront, even though they're not huge, but a few hundred grand in upfront costs throws off EBITDA tremendously when you're only making a few million dollars. So with that, I'm going to leave EBITDA open right now to tell you that my ideal EBITDA on a normal performing model has not changed, that this is a 15 to 20% company when fully normalized and growth is removed from it. And what Phil will try to do and help me out with on guidance at the next call is break it down by segments that we're trying to do, and he thinks would be standard way to approach it, because right now we're still doing positive EBITDA. Why we're in a growth mode, why we're burdening the entire P&L with corporate overhead. And it's really not fair to not be running it on service lines to know that when we're all done, if we had five facilities, our corporate naturally would be divided over five, and we're handling the burden at one location. So we'll do a better job of coming up with that, we think, at Q3 to discuss where we think our EBITDA will end up at. But by no sense are we talking that we're thinking we're running negative EBITDA. In fact, a little bit more about bad debt and the expense that were there. As I mentioned earlier, Phil has already taken that down to what he believes is collectible, and we're feeling more confident than ever that what we put on the books for this year is collectible, and we're hoping that we'll be able to demonstrate that and prove that by year end as his new revenue recognition team gets assembled and goes after amounts of money that we think are rightfully due us that has been written off or will, you know, has been put to bad debt. So with that, I'd like to take it over. And Karen, if you would, I'd like to open it up for questions and answers and try to keep my remarks down to 30 minutes, which I promise.
Absolutely, Chris. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is now open for questions. If you do have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. If you're using a speakerphone, we ask that while posing your question, you just pick up your handset to provide favorable sound quality. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question or comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad at this time. And our first question comes from Siegfried Egert. Please state your question.
Hi, Chris. Thank you for taking my question. My first question relates to the opening of the new physical therapy centers. Can you give us some color on if these centers are fully up to speed or if there's some development to be done there, and, you know, just the current stage of these three centers?
Right, that's a great question. So these centers, when fully aligned, the three of them that are up and running should be at 900 patients per week. And currently, I checked the numbers this morning, we're touching 700. So we're not at full capacity at these centers, but again, neither is the staffing there matching that up. So when ideally set up, our average will be 300 patients per week. That's why when we have five of them up and running, our director of PT is stating that we'll be at 1,500. Now, the core one here might do 400 and the others might be 250. So I'm using averages at each center, and three of them are open as of today.
Okay, I understand that. Thank you for the color. And for the most recent quarter, what was, you know, I don't know how much you can break that down, but what is approximately the contribution that we saw on the top line from these three new physical therapy centers? Because it well depends on when these came online, right?
Right. So I would typically maybe have that up to me, but I'd have to go back and look at that. But on a contribution level right now, we value a PT patient somewhere around $90 per visit is what our average is. Our cash collections are in excess of 82 right now. So I would have to go back and tell you that, but, you know, we weren't at 700 at the beginning of the quarter. We probably ended last quarter at 400, and it's been ramping up. So we probably had an average of about 500, 1,500 additional people, per week coming from quarter to quarter coming over. So to be clear on that, I'll get you that number if you would like. but it's somewhere in the neighborhood right now that it's contributing about $90 of income per patient, and we're running just shy of 700 per week.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. My next question is about exploring the strategic relationships. You mentioned that at the end of your earnings release, and you gave us already some color on that. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit more on who would be the perfect strategic partner, and you know, what are the qualities here that you're mainly looking for in a strategic partner?
Well, again, that's a great question, and with what I think I can and can't expand onto it right now, this would be somebody that's established in other communities, in communities where we think the rates and the state are favorable to conduct our and implement our business model. So, you know, when you go to look where we've always said we had our ideal 10 locations picked out, it's ironic that seven of them right now might even look better because they could be in other communities that one of these partners are in. The second thing is, what can that strategic partner offer us by going to that area? So if we go to that area, is it something that we could offer by opening up a surgery center, or do they already have an existing surgery center? Do they have surgeries and they need surgeons to do it? See, the big problem with the Medicare bundle payments that's coming out that we prepared for is, you know, surgeries used to be $70,000, $80,000 to do a hip when it was all you can bill, you can submit your bill. And Medicare is coming out to say that you need to get this down below $30,000 now, and in some states, including ours, down to 18 or 20. So you need surgeons that are in the same philosophy that more isn't better, meaning when a patient used to get a hip done, they'd go in a hospital, spend 4 or 5 days, then go to a rehab center and spend another 10 days, and one in five of those people had a readmission. I'm proud to say that our total joint doctor right now has an average stay in the hospital of 1 day, is our average for our hips and knee replacements, and we go directly home and then bring them in day three to our own physical therapy. So when you look at the expense we're incurring, other people out there that have older legacy, maybe physicians or people working for them, we can literally do the job in a safer environment, 100% chance less of infection, and bring the people home where we think they heal themselves better for half the cost of what quite a bit of the population of the country is doing it for right now. So
okay,
that's a long-winded answer to just tell you that we want to be in communities and look at a partner that recognizes our skill sets and our model set, that maybe they don't have that in-depth look or data going on. And if a hospital needs to do a surgery because a patient's sick, you need to be near it. But if you can bring them into an outpatient environment, it's better all the way around, the lower healthcare costs.
Great. Thank you for the color. My last question is actually for Philip. You mentioned as one of the focus areas as the new CFO, improving the cash conversion cycle, so basically shortening the cash conversion cycle. Could you elaborate a little bit on how you want to go about this, you know, what the key drivers of shortening the cash conversion cycle will be, and why you think you will be able to convince your suppliers, customers, and to agree ultimately to a shorter cash conversion cycle? Could you please elaborate a little bit on this?
Sure. You know, as we get in and really understand the entire revenue cycle, we're going to understand, you know, how we drop the claims to the insurance payers, how we can compress that time from the time the doctor completes his notes to the time we get the bill to the insurance plan and start the payment process. Going to, you know, put in a lot of time and effort into ensuring that a clean claim goes in for the first time. We don't have to touch it 2 or 3 times. That will also take time out of the cash conversion cycle, and then work on ensuring that when we do have denials, we're processing them in a timely fashion and getting the information that's required to get the claim paid.
Okay.
So those are the areas. You know, as Chris mentioned, though, you know, our business mix does impact that greatly. You know, getting paid for a knee is very different than getting paid, you know, a torn meniscus is very different than getting paid for spinal surgery.
Right.
The time and the review that goes on by the payers for those more expensive surgical procedures. But those are the efforts we're going to put forth to drive that number down and get back to, you know, what I hope to be is more along 100 days over time.
And I'd like to further that a little bit. Thank you, Phil. But let me first by you know, I think that's an important aspect that a clean claim goes out. But, I got to give hats off to the team right now that what Chris Jones under the VP of Operation is, we put Athena software in a couple years back, and, you know, you put in a software system, and it measures that. And we were running a pretty good, I think we still are, we're up over 98% clean claim going out. But the issues with that is that it's like the enemy out there is the payers. They will literally deny a claim if you don't put a comma in after their date of birth. So here, every day, the enemy's out there saying, let's go after the 65% of the country that doesn't have an electronic medical system record keeping, and we just deny those claims, and those mom-and-pop shops just accept the fact they're not going to get paid. So what I really hope, and what I asked of Tim to do for a year, and prior to Phil coming in, if any of you are out there, you would see that part of his compensation package, which is in the public arena, you can see quite a bit of this is that I want those reports monthly so that we can dive all the way down into there to really look at what is the denial rate, what is the amount that Athena is writing off for us, and measure me against my contracts. And I'm telling you, you get reimbursed 25 different amounts for the same SKU. So to replace a knee around here, we have 25 different rates of reimbursement, and that takes a team and an effort to get these little data jockey people in here that he needs to put in to just keep collecting that, to look at all the United knees and see if they're always paying us the right amount. So the real in-depth part is, are they taking us to denial unnecessarily? And that will be the length of time problem that we see all the time. They deny it. And Chris's team goes in there and gets those turned around relatively quickly. So some of them are easy fixes to do, but others just really require the drilling down to say, why does Medicare deny a spine case? Well, that's just their job to deny a spine case, because with Medicare, you can do a surgery without an approval. So if you do more spines, we're going to see a higher denial, and what you can't get a pre-authorization from Medicare on a spine. So you just do it, then you get the denial, and then you fix the denial. So it might actually become length of time normal, but the actual amounts of monies come back down to the charge-off amount, was it appropriate, and going in there now. And the forensic part we want to look at from year to date is, did they do the proper amount for the charge-off, or did they just make the adjustment based on what they felt the codes represented? I know I'm getting technical there, but Phil is, he came out of an industry, what were you doing, Phil, over $1 billion? $1 billion in physical therapy responsibility at his prior place. He saw this, he knows it, he has it nailed inside. He doesn't need 20 people, he doesn't need 10. We're talking about 3 or 4 people here that the investment was the same. I gave Tim the option. Spend a couple $100,000 and find 3 to 4% in revenue recognition we think we're missing right now. If we do a bigger number next year, just take 3 or 4% of that, and it's very low-lying fruit. That's what he's been commanded to do. His compensation package is based on doing that, and that's what we're excited about. He knows how to do it because he's done it before.
That's great. I know you're probably in the early stages of that analysis, but could you give me just a ballpark estimate of, just your rough estimate of what you think you're foregoing right now in potential revenue through, inefficiency in filing claims and billing and stuff like that?
I think I've mentioned that on the last calls. I'm still putting it at 3% right now.
Yeah.
That's close to why we're putting it over to bad debt. And that's why my goal is by January that number will evaporate, because we keep putting it over there because I think that's what's falling through our hands. And that's the minimum opportunity that making an investment into these people, I think, will recognize us with bottom line servicing dollars. You agree?
Yeah, I would agree completely, Chris.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Once again, that's star one if you do have a question. And our next question comes from Karen Sterling. Please state your question.
Yes, hello. So First Choice has a stated strategic goal of revolutionizing the delivery of orthopedic and spine care platforms within the industry. Can you expand on exactly what steps you see involved there and the near, medium, long term, what the current roadblocks are, and how you plan to navigate those.
I'm not understanding. Can you hear her talk? Can you repeat that question just one more time?
Sure. So First Choice has stated a strategic goal of revolutionizing the delivery of a complete orthopedic and spine care platform within the industry. And I would like you to elaborate on what steps are involved in the near, medium, long term, where you see the current roadblocks and how you plan to navigate them.
Okay, so on that there, let me just take the biggest part of the question, and that is that there's 28,000 orthopedics in the country, and 14,000 of them work in hospitals. And the balance that are out there right now, I'm sorry, 7,500, 14,000 are outside in private practice. And what's happened in the private practice world is that a typical orthopedic practice might have an X-ray machine. They might do a little bit of DME. But the fact remains is that they don't take the entire care into hand and preparing it. So the revolutionary part that we do is we want to meet you from when your primary care says, this is the referred place I want to send you to, so that one day that entire care can be done and managed under one set of eyes. So when we bring that in, not only then do we not need a CEO that runs a radiology company, High Imaging, we don't need a CEO that's running the surgery center, we don't need one for DME, so you can cut all those costs out of that because we just want one margin of profit for the entire episode. So what we do that's different than surgeons in our community is they just go in and literally they're just the physician, they make that one fee and they leave, and there would be no, when you go to the financial side, no capability, and that's why it's not being done, to put orthopedics in the country and roll them up together and say we can just run orthopedics. What you need to do is show to the payers with a proven track record that over time, we will be representing that 3 out of 4 of our patients do not require surgery, and that's because if you bring everybody in and you treat them through the care that we want to line up, is some will get an MRI, some will get physical therapy, some will get a surgery. But our uniqueness to the way we go to it right now compared to other surgeons in our community is that we will own that entire episode of care, and in doing that, our surgeons are aligned in cost-saving measures, health-saving processes that make get a patient in, have your total joint done, and you are walking home. Who do you know is having a total spine L4, L5, S1 fusion done and goes home the same day before lunch? And that's the uniqueness of what we know how to do, and we do it very well. We take care of that patient from open to close, and there's no excuse on where that liability of patient care lies except on my shoulders and the team that we're assembling. And again, I put that burden back on the Chris Jones as the VP of medical operation, that she proves that process approximately 20 times a day when we do surgeries every day, and it's working, and we're lowering healthcare's cost. So I'm hoping that identifies the uniqueness of our delivery platform. And let me tell you, just to be clear on this, we are having large hospital systems call us to come to their communities to say, can you bring that method to our community? And I can't because they don't have enough surgeries for me to go to them. But when nationally known hospital systems that are big, hundreds of hospitals, are asking us to come to their community to implement our platform of care, those are exciting phone calls to take and say, boy, we know what we're doing is working when they're asking us to come to their town.
Okay. So where are the problems in actually applying that model? Or do you see it just as a question of time until you can roll it out to enough places?
Well, I think there's a scale of economy that really has to be put into place, and I wish I would be at 4,000 surgeries this year and it was a perfect world. So I got to get better at where we think the inflection point is, where we turn around and really have a viable model on a single user. So 4,000 will do nice, but this overhead at this structure and physical plant and our rent and all our internal costs will manage 5,000 cases. So in Melbourne, although I slated 4,000, I'll come in a little light on the number, but it doesn't mean it isn't growing at a rate that we can't manage it to 5. So I think when we get over 4,000 here, which I'll be on that run rate in December this year comfortably with what I want to implement, we'll be able to go to other communities and know that we want to look to acquire, and acquire is the wrong word, assemble through organic growth 4,000 surgeries in a community at minimum. Taking it to 5,000 will be my number.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, and our next question comes from Anthony Marchese. Please state your question.
Yeah, hi, Chris. Two questions for you. Is the buyback program still active? Yeah, I guess you guys were buying the stock back, what, $1.40 or thereabouts, and today the stock's $1.26. So is that still active?
Yes, it is. The issue with buying back under strict guidelines is you can't be the high bid. You can't do more than certain volume percentages per day. And I don't contact the broker. That's set up through a firm that does that for us automatically, knowing what his guidelines are. He can't be last sale of the day, but you know, I'm not going to go in there today and tell him if we did, you know, 200,000 shares, why didn't you buy it all up? We can't do that. So they're governed under an agreement not to expense over X amount per day. It's an arm's length transaction as it occurs, and it's governed by a managed program that's been put in place.
Okay. And no, I guess my question continuing to buy. I wasn't questioning at what price. I was just questioning, is the program still active? In other words, is the program still authorized to buy back stock? That's really what the question was. Second and final question is, do you anticipate increasing EBITDA in the third and fourth quarter successively?
Well, you know, Anthony, I think that's a great question. I think I partially answered that already earlier. If somebody were to tell me tomorrow that I could close one or two acquisitions in Q3 or 4, and my startup cost for that were to be $1 million, and I can't amortize that or capitalize that, and it took my EBITDA down to zero, but it would double my revenue, your answer would be, let's do that. So I got to keep my field of that wide open. What I'll say again is that normal operations after Melbourne gets to whatever we decide a plateau is. 5,000 surgeries, 10 or 15,000 will be the APV is my guess. And when that finally settles in, and I've used those numbers before when I said if we started doing total joint surgeries, there's a window to get Melbourne to 5,000 surgeries, 15,000 AVP is a $75 million unit. Whether that happens in 18 or not, that's what we still target this market to be. We're at 10,000 at 3,300. So we're still in that growth mode. If I bring in 4 more surgeons between now and the end of the year to set up 2018, we had that discussion the other day, Phil and I, that it's probably going to still cost us 100 to 150 grand per surgeon to bring them in. Startup cost, one-time cost, space, people, things that just cost money. So we might go a little bit that I can't even amortize. I got to expense that. So I would want to tell you, if you don't see us grow revenue, then our EBITDA should start to increase. But if we start to grow revenue, by bringing additional people in, that window is a short-term lower amount of EBITDA in growing. And I've explained that to even why if we open up a new facility, say in Sarasota, I've discussed 2 calls ago, and overnight we did $24 million more to get them to their APV from 5,000 to 10, their EBITDA would be almost zero the day we buy them. If I blended that into what we're doing, it would go down. So fortunately or not, it's got to run parallel to whether or not we're going to grow revenue or not. And in this circumstance for Q2 is we're putting infrastructure people on the ground so that we can do additional PT. I'm hiring an ancillary manager that starts September 1, an HR department to expand, and I wouldn't be putting all that in if I didn't have thoughts to think we could buy something or do something that we could capitalize that with. I just don't need more people to do the same sales we're doing. So I hope that helps answer your question.
It does. It does. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Evan Greenberg. Please state your question.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Great, Evan.
Yeah, a lot of my questions were answered, but what I want to understand is how much have you had to spend in adding staff for the PTs and for the additional surgeries and staffing up before getting the revenue? Does that go into pre-opening expense, or is that something you've had to add staff and train, especially on the billing and HR side as well, since you're growing the business in that growth mode? Do you feel that that's been about $500,000 a quarter, or has it been more than that? Just trying to get an understanding that if there was an apples-to-apples basis, how much would have dropped to the bottom line?
Right. So we did that. It's a great question, Evan. And we looked at it last year, and even when Tim was here, we looked at it. We spent $168,000 in Q4 last year in putting in the PT management people that, in, if we weren't public, we could have capitalized and amortized the startup costs. In Q1, I can't get you everything through Q2 because I didn't burden that onto Phil to verify the number. But in Q1, it was another $265,000 in labor and associated personnel that was for developing the PT that I couldn't capitalize. I had to expense. I don't have Q2 because once the accountants tell you you can't do it, what's the sense of really tracking that other than internally opening up these two facilities and staffing them? I would want to bet it's another 200. So for this year, I'm telling you, I'm thinking it's close to 450 to 500 grand would have gotten amortized if we were a non-public company and charged the startup costs, which we don't have the luxury to do.
Okay, thanks a lot.
As a reminder, that's star one if you do have a question or comment. And Chris, it appears to be no further questions at this time.
Well, with that, I'd like to thank you and everybody that took the time out of their schedule today to get on the call. We're optimistic. I feel more confident than ever that if I stop worrying about the stock price, which is important, I mean, that's a fiduciary responsibility. I look at it every day, but I didn't log on today to see what it's trading at or to just worry about the price. But if I get ready to do this core business, I recognize some of our weaknesses. I think I'm implementing a strengths that will turn around and be well received in the community of the investors. And I continue to thank everybody that's in. And as a long-term investors, I appreciate it. If there are day traders that are in here, they might want to play in and out, and they're not excited. This is an investment. It's something I take very seriously. Our team does. We have the best-in-class people that I think that are working for us, most conscientious people in the industry that I really do feel every day look at what we do and appreciate as we do it. Our turnover at FCMG this year was probably two people. It's hard in this industry to find people that want to work for you, and we have dedicated people. And for some of you investors that have taken the time to come down, we welcome you to do a tour of our facilities. You would see how everybody works as a unit, and that will pay off because when you have people and they invest in what they're doing, which is their job, this will ultimately come back and be a benefit to all of you also as the shareholders. So once again, thank you for your time, and we'll keep you aware as we move forward of any things that come up. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's teleconference. We thank you for your participation. You may disconnect your lines at this time and have a great day.